Mayorkas, we know that this guy is not an innocent bystander. No. This man has been training for decades to literally destroy and bring the U.S. immigration system down to its knees because he hates America, he hates the immigration system, and he hates the Border Patrol. The dirty little secret is that illegal immigration has become the most lucrative and profitable cottage industry in America.
We've seen FEMA divert precious time, resources, and manpower to deal with this administration's border crisis.
FEMA funded, but who funds FEMA? Taxpayers.
Why do you think Americans cannot understand that this is strategic and intentional?
You're either on a side that says we have to do something about this, or you're on the other side saying, hey, it's all BS. We just have to make sure our guy wins. The whole idea of voter ID. There is no logical argument for not having voter ID except, JJ, that you want people that are not citizens to vote.
As if free flights, free phones, free healthcare, free education, free lawyers, and other freebies being offered to illegal aliens weren't already enough, the DC City Council decided to now give illegal aliens the right to vote.
Would you think it's beyond comprehension that the NGOs are becoming quasi-election polling places for illegal aliens?
The NGOs are literally making sure they get registered to vote in certain places. And not only that, they'll take the same group of illegals from, say, Virginia after they're done registering to vote, because all they do is gotta check a box, and they'll take them to other cities. And all you need is some kind of homeless shelter address, and you're good to go to vote. That's a reality.
They are telling illegal aliens, non-citizens, to come vote for Joe Biden. This is corruption at the deepest level. As a matter of fact, I would call it treason.
Would you be able to agree with my theory on this documentary where I'm exploring and going to prove that what Joe Biden and Mayorkas have done is treason to the body of America?
Well, I think that's a fact. Folks, welcome back to Matter of Fact. I'm your host, Ryan Matta. Thank you for joining us. We are coming at you live from America. Today is Tuesday, July 9th, and we are going to get things started. We already got things rolling over here with some super chats coming in. We're going to talk about this major, major story. I think this should be the biggest headline news, the fact that every single media outlet in the world is not covering this story. And it's so bizarre how they always time these child trafficking hearings at the same time they put out these other hearings. So we're going to talk about federal HHS whistleblower to expose government-sponsored, taxpayer-funded child trafficking. Let me read that to you guys one more time. We have an HHS whistleblower that's going to expose that the United States government is using your tax dollars to fund a child trafficking operation at a scale unseen in the history of the world. In world history, we've never had a larger child trafficking network being ran in all of the history of the world. And today, our government is running it. So let's jump over here to the live chat and say, what up to PDX Leroy in the house? Said, blow the lid off the child trafficking government's involvement. Good job, Ryan. Matter of fact, excellent work, my friend. God bless you, PDX Leroy. Ellie May coming in hot. Said, everyone, join the train. God bless you, Ellie. Thank you all so much for jumping in here. We're going to cover that. We're going to kick things off. That hearing doesn't start till 2:30. So get this, folks. Out of the billions of tax dollars that your government wastes, we couldn't get this on any mainstream network. The politicians that are actually doing this, which we'll give them a little bit of credit. I don't even want to give them any credit, honestly. The fact that we have whistleblowers that are telling you that our government is trafficking children, and not every single politician is here for this hearing, should blow your mind. Every single politician should be live streaming this from their personal Twitters, their personal YouTubes. It should be on C-SPAN. It should be on Fox News. This should be the biggest story of our lifetime. Our government has lost 438,000 children. To put that into context, so check this out. I found this one while doing a little bit of research. This one will really make you question things, right? So we know that all these children are being sent to these child migrant concentration camps. Some would almost say that they're very similar to boy camps, right? Like the camps that you'd send your kids to, like Cub Scouts or Boy Scouts, or these little camps, right? So I just was doing a little research and I go, wow, I wonder if there's any sexual assault cases from normal camps, right? Because if we're sending these children to unsupervised child migrant concentration camps that are staffed with people that are from all walks of life, but they're definitely not any of them that are coming out to be whistleblowers. So they're probably not the top tier talent that we're recruiting at these child migrant camps. So just imagine if this kind of trash is happening at camps where Americans are sending their kids, and these are dads with guns, and these scumbags are willing to do this to American kids and think they can get away with it. Just imagine what's being done to these children in these migrant facilities. Check this one out.
Take a look at this array of mugshots. All of these are camp counselors who've been found guilty of sexual misconduct at camps around the country. And with summer camp back on, how can you be sure that your kids are safe?
At Camp La Junta, the slogan is, life is good, camp is better. The elite boys camp in Texas has been in existence for over 90 years. But what this youngster says happened to him inside Cabin 6 at Camp La Junta will break your heart.
I've never told anybody.
In video provided to Inside Edition by the 11-year-old's parents, the youngster tells a forensic psychologist that he was touched inappropriately by a 20-year-old camp counselor.
After you took a shower, you'd put on your towel, and he didn't want you to wear underwear under it, and he'd check you.
While he was doing that, where was your underwear?
It was in my trunk. He has touched me inappropriately.
Crime Stoppers of Houston CEO Rania Mancurios says it's a disturbing scandal that some compare to the Boy Scout scandal.
We've found over 1,000 victims of sexual assault, just sexual assault, at camps across the country spanning over the last 10 to 15 years. We're talking about little children who were sexually assaulted, who were raped or otherwise assaulted at camps across this country because they did nothing else then pack their little cabin bins and show up to camp where they expected to give their all and have fun.
An Inside Edition investigation discovered all these counselors who were found guilty of sexual misconduct offenses at camps across the country.
I sent a letter to my parents.
The camper wrote this letter to his parents, hinting at issues that are difficult for youngsters to talk about. It is not fun anymore. You won't believe this. I had to take a shower 6 times as punishments that were not fair. I want to go home. P.S. Please do something.
You had a predator at the camp that was grooming children. Jeez, and the kids were not being protected against that predator.
It's disgusting.
Mason Hunt was 16 and a counselor in training at Camp La Junta when he says he saw counselor Matthew Bovee acting inappropriately with other campers in 2009.
I saw him kissing their foreheads.
He says he reported Bovee to the senior staff, but he says he was ignored.
From my understanding, they did not take it seriously whatsoever.
In this police interrogation video, the accused counselor insists he was innocent.
But I swear I never ever touched a kid inappropriately. I put so much time into these kids. Okay, so
Bovee accepted a plea deal and got probation, but he later violated the terms of his release by communicating with youngsters and ended up serving 9 years in prison.
We are not anti-camp, and we don't want you to pull your kids out of camp. But what we want you to do is join us in the conversation. Be frontline activists for the safety of your children. Ask questions.
Without admitting any wrong.
So think twice before you send your kids off to, pack the brownies and make some campfires and some pours, because there's some creeps out there. So that's American camps, folks. What do you think is happening to these minor children that have nobody, that nobody's looking for them? There's no parent to help them. There's nobody that they can run to. There's obviously not any whistleblowers besides Carlos, because we would have heard about him. It's disgusting. It is absolutely disgusting. It's filthy disgusting. And of course, we have this hearing going on, so I want to give a little credit to the few that that seem to be here, right? So this is how they worded it, right? This is how it's being posted on Facebook. The exploitation crisis, how the U.S. government fails to protect migrant children from trafficking and abuse. When it should say, federal whistleblower to expose government-sponsored, taxpayer-funded child trafficking. So I want to give a little bit of credit to the few politicians. So it's Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa, who sat here and sandbagged Carlos Arellano. So we had Carlos Arellano inside one of these camps undercover. Could have got all this information, could have got all this evidence. And Grassley's telling him, no, don't get any evidence. Just stay there and keep trafficking children for the government and feeding us information. Well, what information did he feed you, Grassley? You told him not to get any. Scumbag. These guys are freaking cowards, man. Every last one of these guys. So Bill Cassidy, Senator Ron Johnson, host a roundtable. So out of all of the politicians that are getting paid with our tax dollars, it seems that only three of them, and we'll give a break to the few that are in hearings today, but it's odd. Out of all the things, you guys couldn't work one weekend when you could have got every politician involved. Out of the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars that we pay you, out of the millions that we stand by and allow you guys to insider trade and suck out of our 401ks, out of the 53% we pay in taxes, you pathetic a-holes in Congress and the Senate couldn't spare one gosh damn weekend to try to figure out where these 438,000 children are. And I see people going on One American News, and I hear see them on Newsmax and RSBN. Where are they at? Is anybody else covering this hearing today? Probably not. I'm sure the Trump hearing is going to get all the headlines, which, great, we're investigating President Trump. Wow, they're corrupt. Wow, the entire country standing behind President Trump. Who the hell is standing behind these missing children? Just LFA TV, it looks like. Maybe redacted. So here's from the distraction hearing, right? This is obviously where all the politicians had to be today to get their two-second sound bites for Fox News and CNN and Twitter. They'll be posting about it. I guarantee you every one of these politicians will be posting about this today. How many of them are going to be posting about these children? Judge Merchant allowed convicted liar Michael Cohen to testify in President Trump's trial, but he wouldn't allow campaign finance expert Brad Smith to testify. This is Lawfare. But I want to jump to the first one. Sorry, I got a little ahead of myself. So this is Judge Merkin wouldn't let Brad Smith testify at President Trump's trial at NYC. Here's what he would have said. This is the first one. This is opening statements.
In the written testimony today, I explain at length why the convictions of Donald Trump in New York in May, because they relied in the end on alleged violations of Federal Election Campaign Act, or FECA, were incorrect as a matter of law. And I discuss some of the errors of law made by prosecutors and judges in the case. To quickly summarize, the payments that were made to Stormy Daniels were not under current law and should not be, as a matter of policy, treated as campaign expenditures, and thus Michael Cohen's brief fronting of the money, which was repaid to him shortly thereafter, does not constitute an illegal contribution. But moreover, the prosecution theory that the defendant Trump had to engage in a vast conspiracy because of a desperate desire to hide Stormy Daniels' allegations from the public and thus ignore campaign finance laws simply makes no sense, because even had they treated these as campaign expenditures, which again I think they're correct not to do so, nothing would have come out before the election. As I explained, under the reporting schedules, nothing would have been reported until after the election. And the idea that illegality was needed is simply laughable. In fact, Donald Trump and the Trump for President campaign had plenty of cash to pay for the Daniels non-disclosure agreement as of October 27th, 2016. They did not need Michael Cohen to front them money for that purpose. Further, even assuming the expense was a campaign expenditure, no public disclosure of the expense would have been required until 20 days after the election. And repeatedly, the prosecution emphasized that the main desire of Trump was to hide this information until after the election. As a practical matter, then, having Michael Cohen front the money for the non-disclosure agreement between Mr. Trump and Stormy Daniels could have no influence on the 2016 election, despite the repeated claims by the prosecution that that was the core of the case. And this undercuts the entire theory of the case offered by the prosecution. This is explained in my written testimony. I'm happy to answer questions on that as we go forward. But right now, I just want to emphasize that this New York prosecution is something that is a very bad precedent. Let's just put it that way. Not only because it threatens the rule of law, and generally we have not in our defense of democracy, we have not been willing to shortchange procedures of law, but because it also threatens the bipartisan campaign enforcement system established by Congress. If allowed to stand, any state could do what New York has done, that is, pass a law making it a felony to try to influence an election by unlawful means. Then the state court could effectively try defendants for those alleged violations of FECA. Remember, in the Trump case, there was no finding by the Department of Justice that Trump had violated the law. Indeed, they decided not to pursue it. There was no finding that by the Federal Election Commission that Trump had violated the law. They also decided not to pursue it. No federal body had found violations here. Effectively, the state was simply making up the law and enforcing federal law in a partisan, with elected judges, elected prosecutors, unlike the nonpartisan, bipartisan system set up by the Federal Election Campaign Act. And the members of this committee, and there are several who live in states that are dominated by the opposing party at a state level, might want to take heed of that possibility that this game can be played in many different ways. And one can run the risk of being prosecuted for violating FECA, even though the FEC found no wrongdoing. It should be pointed out here that Judge Mershon, during the case, took great pains to make sure that the jury was not informed that neither the Department of Justice nor the Federal Election Commission had decided not to pursue allegations against Mr. Trump, but at the same time allowed in repeatedly statements by the prosecutors and by witness Michael Cohen stating that he had clearly violated the law and there was no doubt about that, and thus implying that Mr. Trump had done so as well. It's worth noting in the end that it's right for this committee, I guess I would say this, it's right for this committee to take up this issue because it is a federal issue, not only of due process, but of that enforcement of the statute. And we could have a tremendous amount of chaos, and every federal campaign will be governed essentially by whatever one can get a state judge and a state jury to do. That's not how the Federal Election Campaign Act was set up, and that's not how this should be pursued. So I hope that this body will recognize that this is clearly a federal issue, and not only are there major constitutional questions about due process, but again, it may even be something where some legislation is necessary to make sure that state prosecutors cannot try this again. Thank you.
All right. So now we have that, folks. Now, I want to give a big shout out to Eric Westerberg. I'd give him a shout out before, but he had wrote this Declaration of Independence from 2024. I just want to read the start of it because it should incentivize you guys to at least come over here to Medium. And I had him publish it on specifically on Medium so you guys can just press the play button and listen to it. But check this out. The Declaration of Independence 2024. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the optimists of mankind requires that they should declare clauses which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. Then that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its power in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. And he goes on to explain everything, how we should, you know, basically implement mass deportation. He's wrote this entire article and it's extremely, extremely good. If you guys get time, swing over there and follow him on X and check this out. He just posted it over on his X account a couple days ago, and he has the X account is Men of Valor at Eric WESTERBURG. Give this thing a listen. It's really worth it. He did a great time, a lot of great work. And Eric, tell your wife I said thank you very much. They sent me a little gift over here as well, so I'm gonna have this hanging up on the wall. Greatly appreciate you, Eric. God bless you guys. So let's keep this party rolling, folks. I want to come over here and jump into this next one. So we got about 10 minutes before the official hearing is supposed to start. But I want to get into a few of these over here as well. So this is Alan Braggs. Again, investigating was a complete fraud from the start. Rhett Kat Kamak, full question and interview right here. Check this out.
I actually want to follow up on my colleague from Florida and his line of questioning. As Representative Gates pointed out, the judge's daughter significantly profited from this case to the tune actually of $93 million raised for her Democrat clients that include a member of this committee, Representative Goldman, I should point out and put on the record, but also authentic campaigns of which Lauren Mershan, the daughter of the judge, she runs this firm, Authentic Campaigns, and was paid nearly $12 million for her work this cycle for her Democrat colleagues, clients, and including $9.7 million by the Biden-Harris campaign. Now, I know that there's been a tremendous amount of discussion today about the severe irregularities of the case, some of the things surrounding jury instructions, but I want to talk about the financial motivations for the DA and the judge. So Judge Wilson, you just said that he got a waiver from Judicial Ethics Committee, and you were pointing out how just the appearance of any impropriety, it's to be taken very seriously. Can you talk about the Judicial Ethics Committee, who makes up that committee, and what are some of the processes that they would use? Would they consider the $93 million or her clients or a direct immediate relative that is benefiting financially from this case?
If you're asking me who makes up the committee, it's a combination of lawyers and judges who are selected by the Appellate Division of New York to hear issues that judges bring to them, asking whether or not they can act ethically in particular circumstances. I myself availed myself of that committee on several instances. When it comes to whether or not they should consider the amount of the contributions, I actually think the amount of the contributions are irrelevant because, as you recall, I said Judge Merchan shouldn't have made any contribution in any small amount to political campaigns. That's based upon a prohibition of judges being involved in political activities, except if they're in a window period during their own campaign. At that time, then a judge's campaign may make a contribution to another campaign or to another political organization. But that's a strict requirement that it only be during an election when such a campaign is made. No, it doesn't matter so much what the amount of the money that was being made. It matters that this is someone of first degree of relationship to the judge who is profiting from activities that oppose the defendant before that judge. And even if he had an ethics opinion exonerating him, saying it's okay, your daughter's not a witness and none of her interests are being tried here, so the ethics committee thought it was just fine, there's still an appearance of impropriety
right. That's
of great concern to the public in general, and that's what a judge wants to avoid when you're hearing a case. You don't want people to feel that your integrity and that your impartiality is being impacted.
Is compromised, right. Which,
and that's what happened here.
And the judge himself had given contributions, and I think you pointed out very appropriately that it doesn't matter if it was a large or small contribution, but the judge in this case, Judge Merchan, he contributed to a political action committee called Stop Republicans. That is inappropriate, correct?
He
I mean, especially overseeing the case of the Republican nominee on the ticket, correct?
He should have known better than to make those contributions while a sitting judge.
Right. And I mean, and I see our Democrat witness, Mr. Wu, you're shaking your head. I'm glad that you agree with us that this is a tremendous question mark on the integrity of this trial. But, you know, I also want to talk a little bit about DA Bragg. Now, I pointed out in our previous hearing that DA Bragg raised $850,000 in campaign contributions immediately upon the announcement of the 34 counts. Mr. Fahey, have you seen any other prosecutors run this similar arc of campaigning on getting a particular person and then using it subsequently to raise campaign cash?
Not that I can think of. There might be somebody that's done it before. I think the DA or state's attorney in Atlanta, I think, is doing something similar with that case, using that as a campaign case, her case against Trump. But other than those, I don't know of any. It's certainly possible, but you know, $800,000 for a DA's race is enormous. I know in your circles it's not, but those type of races are usually very low dollar amounts.
So it's safe to say that there's financial motivation in the campaigns by multiple different DAs and politicians to quote unquote get Trump, correct?
At least a political financial motivation, right. Not necessarily personal.
Correct. Thank you. My time has expired. I yield.
Yeah, her time has expired. She yields, folks. It's like this. This is right. Are you? This is obviously what's more important than 480,000 missing children. It's almost unbelievable at this point. But I expect it, right? I just can't believe that there's only three politicians that are going to be here for these missing children. And it's not even a CNN, C-SPAN. It's a Facebook stream to three politicians' Facebook feeds. Man, I wanted to be there so bad. I tried, guys. I was really trying to get down there. Rep Armstrong, ND, underscores the necessity of a defendant's understanding the charges to receive a fair trial. President Trump's denial of the basic rights is a breach of justice.
And I very much appreciate the questioning from my friend from Texas. She's one of the few other people that has actually practiced criminal defense and public defense. And as somebody who's done that for a very long time, I appreciate that very much. I never did practice in New York. I also have practiced in federal court, and I've practiced in state court and passed several bar exams as well. Judge Wilson, what's the statute of limitations on a misdemeanor in New York?
1 year.
When was this? What is the business records case is a misdemeanor, correct?
The underlying crime, the falsifying business records, yes, that's a misdemeanor charge.
So the only way to get to a felony is by committing it, or is by in concealment of another crime?
Correct.
And each one of those crimes has specific elements?
That's right.
And you have to prove, in order to get a conviction at trial, you have to prove every element of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt, right? That's just traditionally how this works.
That is the right way to do it.
So in the indictment, did they put the underlying crime?
No, they did not. They only described it as other crimes.
Okay. And in the jury instructions, did they put the specific underlying crime?
No, they... falsifying business records was described in the jury instructions. There was some brief description of the New York State election law violation, but there was no description given of the choice of three crimes. There was a description given of falsifying business records, which was pretty ironic because it was falsifying business records to falsify business records.
So, and that's also a misdemeanor, right?
That should be, yeah.
So you have 2 + 2 = 6. Like, if you commit two misdemeanors, you get to the felony statute of limitations, which they had to get or they could have never brought the case.
That's correct. But there's some more question marks regarding the statute of limitations. It's not cut and dry because the time that Donald Trump spent out of New York could be used to toll the statute of limitations. That was the ruling in the Court of Appeals Harvey Weinstein case. He argued that the time that he spent out of California should not have told it, out of New York, that is, in California, should not have told the time limitations, but the Court of Appeals ruled against them on that issue. So that's, I think, how they get around the statute of limitations problem in this case.
So was the election law case a federal election law or state election law underlying crime?
It seemed like it was charged as both when we got to the jury instructions. There's a violation of New York election law charged, but then there's one among the three charges underlying is an unspecified violation of federal election law.
And then the third one was tax violation, right?
Also unspecified.
So all three of those underlying crimes have significantly different elements of the crime.
That is correct.
Were any of the elements of those crimes listed?
No, not at all.
So, this is important, and it might not be as robust or anything, but when you defend a client in court, if you don't know what the elements of the crime you're defending, how do you mount a defense?
You can't. That's the very issue of fundamental fairness that I referenced. You, as a defendant, are entitled to know what the charges are against you so that you can defend against those charges. Donald Trump was never made aware of what the extent of the charges were against him until the end of the trial.
And those, and the elements of the crime go in the jury instructions. I mean, traditionally, that's how it works. Federal court, state court in North Dakota, state court in Minnesota. I've been in all of these different jurisdictions. You actually get the elements of the underlying crime, correct?
Any time that I instructed a jury, I instructed them what the elements of the crime were.
And instead, in this case, they got a grab bag.
they got a choice of three when it came to the underlying crimes, and we don't even know which ones they chose. So we don't know whether or not they could have been unanimous on those three or not. That's another failing of the jury instruction.
So not only did we have not the elements of the crime, but we had three different crimes with three vastly different elements of the crimes.
All unspecified.
None of them in the indictment. The elements of the crimes weren't in the bill of particulars. Last hearing, I had the bill of particulars waved at me like it was some kind of magic document that flew in here with its own cape.
So the statement of facts only describes a series of allegations, a series of actions that it's believed that Donald Trump took. None of them describe any criminal activity. None of them describe any, they don't describe any elements of any crime.
And that's why you believe, as do I, that when this goes on appeal, there's going to be significant legal issues to argue that the jury never actually got them put in front of them.
I have very little doubt that this matter will be reversed on appeal and based upon these issues.
Because I've actually been pretty, I believe jury trials are still the best way to determine guilt and innocence. I just believe juries are only as good as the information put in front of them. So, and with that, I yield back.
Oh yeah, he's going to yield back. All right. Check this out, folks. Let me let you in on our first sponsors today, and we should be kicking off this party to get this next hearing started, if they actually start on time, which they never do. But check this out. Let me let you in on our first sponsor today, folks. Swing over to TacRightLFA.com and check out this legendary pair of night vision binocular goggles. I bet you always wanted one of these, but you didn't get one because of how pricey they were. Yeah, some of them sell for up to 4K, but guess what? Our audience can grab one of these for under $200. Now, most night vision goggles, especially the military grade ones, they require a tiny bit of light to see in complete darkness, but not these folks. These revolutionary design by TacRite allows you to see in complete pitch darkness. Our viewers can get this amazing one-time discount. You can grab one today for under $200. You don't need a coupon. You don't need anything. Just visit TacRightLFA.com. This will make a great gift for anybody that is interested in outdoors, hunting, military, or maybe you just want to feel safe in Biden's America at night, folks. Definitely something that if you're a parent, I suggest having one of these. If stuff goes down and you can't see at night and your enemy can, well, guess what? You ain't going to be surviving too long, folks. Grab yours today. They won't last long. Last time they were on our show, they sold out in under 3 hours. 3 hours. That's pretty quick. And up next, folks, you guys can donate directly over here on LFA TV. You guys can drop those super chats. You can go over to our website and make donations as well. Jeremy's revamping the website, so it should be up and running hopefully by next month. And that's where you guys will find our merch, hoodies, hats, t-shirts, clothing, you name it. Jeremy's got it all over there on the site. So swing over to the LFA website and take a gander. And up next, we got Armra, folks. Oops. That would have been an echo, Armra. That would have been an echo had that page set up for the show that's about to start here in a minute. So check this out. Armra is a way to revive your health. You can transform your health starting at its foundation. Armra's colostrum protects, rebuilds, and strengthens your body's barriers for defense against everyday threats and enhanced vitality. We all know that modern living in Biden's America breaks down your immune barriers, especially if you got triple boosted. Well, guess what? Armra harnesses the power of over 400 plus functional research-backed nutritions from Armra's colostrum, which offers transformational benefits for your body's health and performance, strengthens your immune barriers, optimizes your microbiome, and empowers your body with a blueprint to revitalize health from the inside out. When you take Armra's colostrum, you're giving your body the best protection against everyday toxins, pollutants, allergens, and processed ingredients, paving the way for optimal health and vitality. So check this out. We've worked out a special offer just for you folks over here at LFA TV. You guys can receive 15% off your first order. You just got to go to tryarmor.com/LFATV and get 15% off your first order. Again, that is tryarmor.com/LFATV. And if you guys want to help us out and keep the lights on over here at Matter of Fact, you guys can use my MyPillow code. It is MATA. We'll get you 50 to 65% off. Big shout out to the three people in all of human history who have used that code. I greatly appreciate it. And if you guys would like to stack some Bitcoin, my affiliate links are down below. My favorite exchange, if you live outside the United States, is Bybit. They'll give you the most free Bitcoin based off the amount you deposit. And then if you live inside the United States, Coinbase is down below. And on my personal YouTube channel, at the very top of the page there is a step-by-step process that'll walk you through how to buy Bitcoin in less than 15 minutes with direct deposit from your bank. So if you guys are interested in learning more, I got a lot of great content that'll teach you all about Bitcoin and crypto, which I suggest you stack on this dip right here because it might be the last time you see it below 70,000, maybe even below 100,000. When Bitcoin rips this next time, it's going to break 100K. So hopefully you guys are ready to buckle up and make some money. I sure am. I'm sure stacking it. I bought like 17K in the last probably 45 days, give or take. Anytime I get any extra money, it just goes right into Bitcoin. But that's like my 401K. I don't ever touch it. So if I got myself in a jam, that would suck. Anywho, I digress. Folks, smash that like button. Let's get into this hearing. Where the hell is this hearing? Oh, it's live, baby. We live. All right, so check this out. Here's what we're about to get into, folks. Let me give you a, if you guys are just joining us, please smash that like button. Probably the most important stream we've ever done over here on LFA TV. So federal HHS whistleblower to expose government-sponsored, taxpayer-funded child trafficking. So they give a little pretext here. America's future, stop the shame. Press conference immediately following the Senate testimony. So that's going to be about 4:30. I'm going to try to run this show as long as Jeremy will let me, but I might have to cut it at 3 o'clock. So if I do, I apologize. I'll probably fire it back up somewhere else over on X or something. Urge Congress to vote yay for the CRA. Mobilize citizens to protect the children. Who, they ask? Who, you may ask? Current and former federal agency whistleblowers. What, you may ask? Stop the shame. Press conference at National Press Club. Where? You may ask, National Press Club, Zenger Room, Zenger Room. When? 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Tuesday, July 9th, immediately following the Senate roundtable. Either way, that will be streamed to my Twitter. So if you guys are not seeing it over here, we're going to make sure we cram this down their throat. I'm going to watch every second of this. So on Tuesday, July 9th at 2:30 p.m., Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa, along with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, R. Wills, and Bill Cassidy, MD, will host a roundtable entitled The Exploitation Crisis, How the U.S. Government is Failing to Protect Migrant Children from Trafficking and Abuse. The roundtable will provide oversight to the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS's unaccompanied UC program, that is unaccompanied children program, their UC program, which has allowed thousands, no, which has allowed hundreds of effing thousands of vulnerable migrant children to be lost or handed over to potential criminals. Not or, is currently. This is happening immediately following the roundtable. The federal agency whistleblower testifying at the Senate will participate in a press conference sponsored by America's Futures at the National Press Club. And this is what's crazy to me. Like, it's sponsored by the National Press Club. And what press do you guys have there? Because I don't know one reporter. I don't know why they didn't offer to fly out press, but I mean, I would have been there if they would have covered the trip. Media advisory, Grassley, Cassidy, Johnson to host roundtable on exploitation of unaccompanied migrant children. On Tuesday, July 9th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, Senator Chuck Grassley, Bill Cassidy will host a roundtable, blah, 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 blah. It basically says the same thing. So without further ado, give me 2 seconds. I got to get the right scene set up in here and make sure I got it set up right.
Has cut the length of stay down more than...
Hold that thought. I just got to get the audio. I have to do something special whenever I do stuff like this. So just give me 1 second and we should be ready to get this party started, folks. Do me a favor, guys. Please, please, please. If there's any stream that you just ever took 2 seconds of your time to smash a like button for me. If you guys are your first time watching this content over here on LFA TV, this is the child trafficking stuff hits home for me. I don't know why, but it just, out of all the crazy crap that the Biden administration does, out of everything that we have to dig up evidence and check these bank records and check this out and figure this out to try to see if we can prove that Biden did this. Dude, our government's trafficking effing children. We have it. It's cut and dry. We have all the evidence we need to literally put these people into a position where they may swing from a rope for the crimes that they committed. We have all the evidence. It's happening. We know it's happening. We can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. If there was any one thing that we just crammed down the Democrats' throat, it's right here. We don't need to find anything else. We don't need any more conspiracy theories. We have a cut and dry case right here. Child trafficking being carried out by our own government. Gosh damn it. Please smash that like button, folks. Let's roll.
On this very issue, and I quote myself, how many more minors have been released into the care of others who claim to be their parents or family friends who don't really care about their well-being? End of my quote. When I last chaired the Senate Finance Committee, I launched an oversight investigation with my colleague, showing that the Biden HHS and one of the major contractors, Cherokee Federal, has placed kids in very dangerous situations even after being warned not to place them there. I've written to 24 HHS contractors and grantees to ask what they're doing to prevent children from falling into the hands of traffickers and those trying to exploit these children. These entities collectively receive billions of taxpayer dollars and thus have a duty to answer Congress when it wants to know how those funds are all being spent. The Biden administration's HHS instructed these very entities that I wrote to not to respond to this senator and instead to direct my inquiry back to HHS. Now, this is obstruction, just like what the Biden EPA tried to do in my oversight work of some of those contractors. HHS wants these contractors to be silent, and you will soon see why they want them to be silent. The United States Congress must demand that silence be broken. I won't tire in seeking those answers. Today, we're going to take another step on that path with this forum. And as part of our next step together, my colleagues and I'll be requesting that the Government Accountability Office conduct updated work to ensure that HHS unaccompanied children's program has proper internal controls. Of course, my other investigative activities will certainly continue and no stone will be left unturned. For example, in January of this year, I issued a law enforcement referral to Department of Human Services or Homeland Security and the FBI regarding additional evidence of human trafficking that I obtained. These children deserve nothing less than our maximum effort. Now I'd like to recognize Senator Cassidy for his opening statement, and then Senator Johnson will follow him, and then I'll introduce the people that are at our panel, and we thank you for participating.
Thank you, Senator Grassley. Thank you, Senators Johnson and Cornyn here, and all of you for participating in this extremely important roundtable. When President Biden took office, we had the lowest rates of illegal immigration in nearly 50 years. But instead of maintaining strong border policies inherited from the Trump administration, President Biden rushed to overturn them. He ended Remain in Mexico, reimposed so-called catch and release, and exempted unaccompanied children from Title 42. Predictably, these open border policies encourage one of the worst rates of illegal immigration ever, including over 500,000 unaccompanied migrant children. In fact, the month after unaccompanied children were exempted from Title 42, there was the highest monthly total of these children crossing the southern border in history. The Office of Refugee Resettlement, or the ORR, has the responsibility of caring for unaccompanied children once they cross the border, ensuring that they are released to safe and thoroughly vetted sponsors. Now, the surge of migrant children under President Biden overwhelmed ORR, and children were hastily sent to emergency care facilities with undertrained and unvetted staff and poor living conditions. As the surge continued, OOR staff were directed by their superiors to prioritize speed over safety and to limit the amount of information collected when releasing children to sponsors. Even HHS Secretary Becerra pushed for faster results, telling OOR staff that the sponsor vetting process should be modeled after Henry Ford's assembly line with, quote, machine-like efficiency. This reflects either the government workers doing this project, who are often working from home, by the way. They weren't in the office, they were working from home, are extremely inefficient, or it shows a willingness by the department to override normal precautionary safety measures. To speed up the process, ORR dramatically weakened its oversight of the sponsor vetting program, including making many vetting requirements optional. Under these policies, ORR were not required to check if a sponsor had a criminal record or to even verify that the sponsor's identity is real. For context, out of the 342 case files reviewed from March 2021 to April 2021, ORR did not conduct background checks on 54 cases before sponsors took custody of the children. This is unbelievable. This is incredibly troubling. So, what are the effects? Children are being released into dangerous environments to be exploited for illegal labor, leading to serious injuries such as dismemberment and shattered bones. There is even a press account of one child dying when he was pulled into a meat processing machine. The Biden administration is failing these children. It's failing basic human rights. It seems to have decided it's more politically expedient to release children as quickly as possible without going through essential checks to ensure children are not being released into harmful environments to be abused and exploited. For years, members of Congress, my colleagues and I, have urged the Biden administration to make real reforms to ORR and protect these children. Instead, ORR released a final rule codifying nearly all of its failed sponsor vetting policies and put these failed policies into agency regulations. I appreciate Senator Grassley's leadership in champion a Congressional Review Act to overturn this harmful rule and to hold the administration accountable for its activities that put these children in danger. As ranking member of the HELP Committee, the committee with oversight over ORR and child labor laws, I'm investigating the Biden administration's failure to protect migrant children from exploitation. Since 2023, I've sent 7 letters to multiple federal agencies, including the Office of Refugee Resettlement and the Department of Labor, seeking information to better understand the effects of Biden's policy. Now, regrettably, the Biden administration has refused to cooperate with our investigation, failing to respond altogether, or providing vague responses copied and pasted from press releases. Perhaps more shockingly, it has even prevented private entities from cooperating with our investigation. When I requested information from an ORR contractor intimately involved with the sponsor vetting process, ORR attempted to block them from answering our questions, instead referring our inquiries to the HHS Secretary of Legislative Affairs. This blatant lack of transparency with the American people is reprehensible. Frankly, it's hard to see this as anything other than an effort to cover up and shield the Biden administration from scrutiny for its mistreatment and mishandling of unaccompanied children, perhaps particularly in an election year with the president behind in the polls. Stopping the exploitation of children should not be partisan. This is not a Republican or Democratic issue. When vulnerable children are harmed or die at the expense of bad policies, everyone should be outraged. Everyone should be seeking to do things better. President Biden, you have the power to prevent this. You can secure our border and reform ORR to protect children from harm. Unfortunately, you're choosing to manage the border crisis as a messaging issue for your campaign rather than addressing the humanitarian catastrophe that has resulted from your policies. If exploitation of children will not force this president into action, I'm not sure what will. Thank you to our witnesses for coming today to speak. We must protect vulnerable children from further harm.
Thank you, Senator Cassidy. Now, Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Senator Grassley. I want to thank you for leading this effort. Your dogged determination in investigating this unbelievably serious issue. I want to thank Senator Cassidy, Senator Cornyn, and our other colleagues that will join us here. I certainly want to thank the witnesses and the whistleblowers. I also want to thank you for your protection of whistleblowers over the years. We need more of them coming forward. I think my primary point is what we're going to be discussing today, examining, revealing, should come as no surprise to anyone. We've known since the start of the Biden administration, I don't know how many times I've said it, that Biden and his Democrat colleagues, their open border policy facilitates the multi-billion-dollar business model of some of the most evil people on the planet. Drug traffickers, human traffickers, sex traffickers. This has been obvious. I became chairman of Homeland Security in 2015, the last 2 years of the Obama administration, all 4 years during the Trump administration. We held something like 36 hearings on the problems associated with illegal immigration. Now, this is what, during the Trump administration, a president who actually wanted to secure the border and stop the flow. 36 hearings. In one of those hearings on June 26, 2019, we heard testimony about a 51-year-old man who was apprehended before they did an identity blood test, DNA test. He confessed that he came across the border posing as a family unit with an infant child that he bought for $84. And that was testimony before the Homeland Security Committee in 2019. Vice President Kamala Harris was on my committee at that point in time. So again, this should come to a surprise to nobody. And of course, Project Veritas in November 29, 2022, released a video with an interview with one of our witnesses, Terry Lee Rodas. A few days after that, I wrote a letter joined by four of my colleagues. I just want to read a couple segments for this. This was to HHS Secretary Becerra. We write concerning an alarming report by a federal employee whistleblower that the Department of Health and Human Services is knowingly transferring unaccompanied migrant children in the custody of criminals, including sex traffickers. If these claims are true, we wrote, we certainly know they are true. This is pure evil being committed by your agency. This cannot be swept under the rug. The American public must know the truth about what is happening to these victims of the Biden administration's inhumane open border policy. Now, we wrote that letter December 5th, 2022. Now, you would think, with the revelation of that whistleblower interview by Project Veritas, with a letter from five U.S. senators expressing the concern about what is happening to children, unaccompanied minors, being taken into custody by U.S. agency officials, you would think the Secretary of Health and Human Services would jump on that, investigate this, and clean it up. He didn't even respond to our letter. That's what we're dealing with here. We are talking about total neglect. Fast forward, February 23rd, 2023, the New York Times, of all publication, writes an article about this. And God bless the reporter, Hannah Dreyer, for investigatory work. That's exactly what Senator Grassley was talking about. We need an investigatory press that holds both sides equally accountable. She writes an article, 85,000 children, unaccompanied children, apprehended, given over to HHS, ORR, released to a sponsor, are unaccounted for. 85,000 children. Again, that's over a year ago. Has the Biden administration, has Secretary Becerra, has Secretary Mayorkas, have they hopped on this? Have they put all hands on deck to dig into this, make sure this doesn't happen, that these children are protected? No, they won't even respond to our oversight letters. That's what we're dealing with here. The American public has to understand this isn't an accident. They want an open border. They caused this problem. They're well aware of the inhumanity of the depredations being visited on the people that they claim to have a humane open border policy for. So that's what's at stake. Again, I truly appreciate the witnesses, our whistleblowers, Senator Grassley, all the work you've done on this, and I'm looking forward to the testimony. I hope the American people are listening, and even more importantly, I hope Secretary Becerra, Mayorkas, President Biden listen to this and actually start doing something about it before another child is raped or trafficked or murdered or decapitated. Thank you.
So that's where I get a little, like, I hope everybody's watching this because we're streaming it to our personal Facebook pages. So the, few thousand people that follow us on Facebook, we're not Ron Johnson isn't on Fox News going, why isn't Fox News covering this? All these people are on Fox News. They're on the mainstream media. They're all over the gosh damn place. How many other networks? Is there any other network besides LFA TV streaming this? If you guys get time, let me know because I would like to know. I highly doubt it. I almost guarantee not. And I would love to know who it is so I can follow them if I'm not. Gosh damn.
Well, now to work.
Senator Harris. I invited HHS to attend, but they unfortunately declined, as you can understand exactly what Senator Johnson said about their willingness to discuss this either by letter or in person. Notably, on June 26 this year, I wrote a letter to HHS requesting records relating to sponsor vetting, among other items. The due date for production was yesterday, and I get the same result that Johnson got because HHS has failed to respond. Tara Rojas is an employee with the Council of the Inspector General on Integrity and Efficiency, and has been part of the Federal Inspector General community for 18 years. She's also a fellow at the Research Center for Excellence to Counter Human Trafficking. Tara served as a federal detailee to HHS Emergency Intake Site in California in 2021. Deborah White is an employee with the General Services Administration with over 17 years of acquisition, contracting, and project management experience. And like Tara, she was detailed to California Emergency Intake Site in 2021. Both Tara and Deborah will speak in their capacity as whistleblowers, and they don't speak on behalf of their current employees. Dr. Gerald Sadowski is a professor, criminologist, and recognized expert on human trafficking. He conducts research in Central America and at the U.S. border on trends in human trafficking. Thank you all for appearing, and I'd like to now turn it over to Senator Cassidy.
It's my pleasure to introduce Secretary Siobhan Harris, Secretary of the Florida Department of Children and Families.
Put a pin in that for a second, folks. I'm going to stream this over on X here in a few minutes. We got to wrap up today's show. It is 2:57. So what you're going to hear from is you're going to hear from people like Tara Rojas. You're going to hear from people like Deborah White. You guys have seen Deborah over here. We just flew down to D.C. to do an interview with Deborah. I've only got a few seconds to get through a few of these clips. So let me just give you a taste of what we're going to be talking about, what Deborah is going to talk about. This is an interview that me and JJ just did while filming our documentary, This is Treason.
There's a two-day hiring fair at the Pomona Fairplex Center for Migrant Children starting today. The center is looking to hire hundreds of people starting immediately for mostly nights and weekends. They say their team provides appropriate child care and works to unify children and teens quickly and safely with loved ones or a qualified sponsor.
So I came to answer the call in May of 2021. I answered the Biden administration's kind of all call to the executive government, just asking for volunteers to come and help with the undocumented children that were crossing the border.
That's right, Susan. We're outside of Gate 3 here at the Pomona Fairgrounds. We know that at least 80 of those migrant children are here. That happened earlier this evening, but within the last 45 minutes or so, we saw a couple of buses pull into the fairgrounds, we assume carrying more of the children. These kids, part of the initial influx of migrant children who for the foreseeable future will be calling this place their home.
And so I was selected from my agency to go and went to the Dallas Processing Center. And that's where I got together with a team that was going to deploy to Pomona, California, where they had an emergency intake shelter for Health and Human Services Office of Refugee Resettlement. And so initially my thoughts were, you know, doesn't matter your politics, you know, this is not a political, at least it shouldn't be a political issue, right? These are children that have crossed the border into this country, and regardless of how they got here, they're here. And we just need to, you know, be kind people, you know, and be a smiling face. I happen to be a Hispanic American. I speak Spanish fluently. I'm originally from Argentina. So I thought, hey, I have the language skills. I'm also, you know, certified project manager and certified as a contracting officer representative at the senior level. So there were many skills that I believed, you know, could be very useful for them in processing the children. And so I was selected and I did go. And when I got there, it just wasn't at all what I had expected. You know, I had expected that since they have been doing this for years, you know, putting up these emergency intake shelters and processing children that were coming across the border, I thought it would be very orderly. But that's not what I found at all. That's not what I found at all. I was actually very shocked.
Tonight, police say a 15-year-old disabled girl was raped at a hotel that houses migrants in Rockland. The man accused of attacking the girl is a migrant who's staying at that shelter. Yeah.
Let that sink in, folks. Up next is the NFSC. We got a stacked lineup of shows from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. over here on LFA TV. So if you guys did not enjoy this show, I promise you there is a show over here on LFA TV you will enjoy. Normally, we don't sit here and watch hearings, but this one hits home for me. So thank you guys for joining me. We're going to continue this hearing, folks. We're going to cram this content right down their throat. So if you guys aren't following me over at Ryan Matta Media on X, please follow me over there. That's where you'll see me pushing out all these short clips from this documentary. And if you guys want to learn more about the trafficking that's going on, please swing over there. Give us a follow. God bless each and every one of you guys. Hopefully you guys have a fantastic day over here on LFA TV. We'll catch you guys same place, same time tomorrow. We out. Peace.
Run.